So we saw a lot of things this week about sort of what captures time. These are some of the perspectives from this conference. I'm going to try and be very brief and just get through 15 minutes of material here. So I won't comment on some possible connections, except where they come up in the talk. I'm going to try and give you a way to look at time that sort of cleanses the brain a little bit and is perhaps ecumenical between many, if not most, of these perspectives on time. There'll be two theses. One is, I think, I hope will be widely accepted, that time has a certain relational structure characterized locally by a representation. I'll tell you what I mean. And I think focusing on that relational structure, you can draw a lot of information out of it and avoid some confusion. Second thesis will be about the arrow of time. I think in 15 minutes, I won't have time to talk about the matter-antimatter distinction. But I feel both the arrow of time and the antimatter-matter distinction really emerge from this relational structure when it's properly understood. So I'll give some indication about that as well, and some papers where I talk about that more. So the first thesis, time, whatever it is, has a rich relational structure. So in many discussions of time, we'll start with something like this. We got a point, and we'll label it. And we'll say, that's T, 2 o'clock. In this talk, I'm going to try and get away from that kind of language and talk more about this, where we label this part that is something like time translation by 2 hours. There's various reasons one might want to focus on this sort of thing, but one is that a great deal of physics is contained in that kind of information, the relational facts about time. I'm going to label this the representation view. It's not due to me. I think it's due to a lot of people, and it's an old idea. But I'll give you some motivation, philosophical and physical. There's a long debate about relationism. Many participants in this conference have participated in it, but I'll give a reference here to Ehrman's World Enough in Space-Time. That's a very classic work on relationism. These are all links, by the way, if you want to follow them later. Space-time functionalism is a bit more of a agnostic view than relationism. It won't deny the substantival nature of space-time, but it'll say, you know, we all disagree about what exactly time and space are. Let's set that bit aside and be agnostic about it for now and try and reduce the essential facts to relational ones. You can read about that in these papers. Highly recommended Butterfield and Gomes' recent paper. And this is really the representation view is the picture of Wigner and Bargmann that I'm going to tell you about, originating in the representation of the Lorentz group. From this conference, I noted going through, there's probably more interesting connections, but some possible connections to some things people have said. There was systematically, in many of these talks, a distinction between two parts of time. We had Parmenides and Heraclitus with Nicolas. Many speakers discussed the difference between causal and stochastic structure, time translations versus time in a quantum reference frame. But here's an even simpler motivation. When I draw a picture like this, I've got a particle in some place, and I'm going to imagine moving it to another place. So I've described a translation. When do we have a time translation in that situation, as opposed to a spatial translation? Well, what is it about it that makes it a time translation? Now, sociologists might say, looking at all of you, well, they all use T when they're talking about a time translation. And they use something else for space, S or X or something. But I think a more interesting thing to say is, well, when we have a representation of time translations, it's worthy of calling a time translation. When we're just looking at state space, it's otherwise hard to see. So what I want to propose for this part of the talk is to try and view representing time not as just one thing. You know, many people have said in this conference, you know, we all disagree about the one thing that time is. But let me pull it apart a little bit. I propose to represent time in two parts, where you have on one side time translations, and on the other side you have, well, some structure might represent states and symmetries of that structure. And you'll have a homomorphism between the two. And that'll be a representation of time. Now, I don't know if the authors who said these sorts of things might like to place Parmenides on one side or Heraclitus on the other side, causation on one side and statistics on the other side. But for me, I'm interested in some structure. It will often be a Lie group. In practice, it often is. And the time translation is an element of that Lie group on the left side. And on the right side, I've got transformations between the state space that are symmetries of that state space, like unitaries. So we take time translations, a structure, you know, however we interpret it, and we represent them among state-space symmetries. And this leaves open a lot of interpretation about what time translations might be. If you're a strong relationist and you view time translations as having nothing to do with the manifold, it's something rather about relations between matter-energy states, facts about clocks, you know, any number of things, you ought to have time translations in there somewhere. And you'll view whatever that structure is, if it's a group, groupoids, category of some other nature, you'll have a homomorphism. You'll want its structure to live as a little copy among symmetries of the state space. We see this all the time in elementary physics. So in classical mechanics, you would typically write down time translations as the Lie group, R plus. The state space symmetries in symplectic mechanics, you'd have symplectic and anti-symplectic operators, rather transformations on the state space. And you represent time by a homomorphism from the Lie group to what would now be the phase flow through state space. And of course, this contains all kinds of great information like Hamilton's equations. They just live in this description. I define the vector field associated with the phase flow. Again, just a representation of time translations, and they get Hamilton's equations. Similar story in quantum mechanics. You know, we say, we all say at some point, you have a unitary representation, irreducible unitary representation of R plus, or unitary representation of R plus. It's again, a representation. I use Stone's theorem and take derivatives and I get the Schrodinger equation. A lot lives in these time translations. So let's elevate them to something important. And then of course, this is sort of the historical origin. I think Wigner and Bartschmann did this famous work looking at the representations of the Poincaré group. But one could look, you know, I'm looking at Lie groups here, one could look at discrete groups for discrete time or any number of other structures. So that's the picture that I'm calling the representation view. And now in just a few more minutes, I'll take you through an application of this, why I think it helps clean the brain in some places. So this is thesis 2A, that an arrow of time emerges from time's relational structure. I'm not talking here about the arrow of time the way it's commonly discussed as an increase of entropy in the universe. To me and to many people, that's a fact about boundary and initial conditions. It's not a fact about time in the sense I was just describing it. Time, the time translations. So I'm interested in an arrow of time associated with time translations. And let me show you how you can get that. So I'll start with some confusions on where you wouldn't want to go if we ignore this two-part nature of time that I mentioned at the outset. So in a discussion from Tuesday, Carlo and Abai were talking about electromagnetism following Abai's talk. And made the observation that electromagnetism is not invariant under this transformation where the E and B fields go to, well, E of negative T and B of negative T. It's not a symmetry of E and M, but rather under this transformation where you reverse the sign of the B field. And of course, there's a similar strange phenomenon many of us have encountered in quantum mechanics. The Schrodinger equation is not invariant under psi of T goes to psi of negative T, but it is under Wignerian time reversal, where psi of t goes to psi star of t in the Schrodinger representation, or to the Y Pauli matrix times psi star in the Pauli representation. And where's all this extra junk coming from? So a very natural question that I think Carlo was alluding to is a true time reversal just t goes to negative t? Why are we doing all this other stuff? We want to get at time and time's reversal. And this question was raised by some philosophers, David Albert in 2000 in his book, Time and Chance, and Craig Callender in an independent work. I give an overview in this paper here. Well, my answer is, yes, that is what time reversal is. It's T goes to negative T when we're talking about the time translations. But that's the left side of the picture. On the right side, the structure of time translations and time reversal, there's a sense in which it follows deductively the thing that Wigner said and the thing that everybody usually says. So let me just now briefly explain that. So some authors think of time like this and they forget about this, not to mention this. So I'd like to clarify that now. So I've got let's take this example. I've got a time translation group and this transformation T to negative T is a Lie group automorphism. if you like this kind of thing, it turns out it's the unique non-trivial automorphism that's in involution. So this helps explain perhaps why we choose this to be time reversal. It's the only option we have. But when you have an automorphism like that, you can use it to extend your group. I have a group of time translations and I can use the semi-direct product to produce an extension of my group that includes time reversal. So R plus extends to a group with time reversal in it. It looks like this. The Poincaré group extends to the full Poincaré group, again with a semi-direct product. And there's many references for this, so I linked one here. In these extensions, what you're doing is you're producing a new element that allows you to implement time reversal by conjugation. It looks like this. And this defines time reversal on the left-hand side of the picture, on the time side. Now, how do we define it on the right-hand side? We've got two sides after all, right? Like, how do I define this U of tau? Well, the lesson here is that defining time reversal in these state space pictures, it's just a problem of extending a group. I've got a group of time translations, and I'd like to know, is there an extension that includes time reversal? An extension of my representation to a representation of a bigger group that includes time reversal. And of course, such a representation does not in general exist. Given a representation of time translations, now this could be the Poincaré group, or it could be R plus, it might not be the case that a representation of time reversal exists. This occurs precisely when time reversal symmetry is violated. Abhay and I talked about this a little bit, as Abhay mentioned earlier in the conference. And I find this really interesting. This is not just an accident. We're looking at state space, and we're learning something about the asymmetries of time. We're learning there isn't a certain transformation available. There isn't a certain automorphism. And that in the representation picture, that's suggesting to me that there isn't this sort of symmetry. There isn't an automorphism of whatever the right structure for time translations are. Time translations lack a symmetry. And a good metaphor for this, I feel, is a shadow of an asymmetric object. It's like we can learn about an object's asymmetries by looking at its shadow, learn something about them. And similarly, we can learn about the symmetries of time and its asymmetries by looking at its shadow, its homomorphic copy on state space. Now, when an extension exists, when you can represent time reversal, in general, you can now just ask as a technical question, what does it look like? And in general, it's a non-trivial state space operator. So you can prove propositions like this, that every non-trivial positive energy representation of this T goes to negative T, time translation reversal, in quantum mechanics always gets implemented by an anti-unitary. In classical mechanics, it gets implemented by an anti-symplectic, these strange operators. Now, lesson is, just because we send T to negative T on the time translation side doesn't mean that's what happens on the state space side. Rather, it's this sort of thing happening. We're looking at the copy of little T on the state space. And that's this unitary that gets transformed in a way that does produce a big T. And similar lessons hold. I've worked a lot of these cases through in many, many other theories. Similar thinking applies to discrete symmetry. So yeah, we can look at parity in this sort of picture and charge conjugation. I'm basically out of time. So I'll just mention briefly that the antimatter-matter distinction can be studied in this way as well. There we draw on this fact that the local space-time symmetry group isn't really SL2, isn't really P, the Poincaré group, but something more like SL2C. And its automorphisms include things that exchange matter and antimatter on a plausible interpretation. So I won't go into that. I'll just leave you with the two theses again, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Brian, for your talk. Just looking when there are some questions. A lot of applause. Lorenzo Macone has a question.
I was just curious if you can say some more about matter antimatter. You just skimmed through.
Yeah, I went quickly there. So my picture here is one where I'll begin with a representation of the continuous space-time symmetry transformations like the Poincaré group. And now I'll take them to include not just those elements. I'll take them to be the universal covering group of the Poincaré group. My strategy with the Poincaré group was to ask, what are its discrete automorphisms? And that turns out to be this group that is isomorphic to the Klein-Fourier group. I've got the identity, parity, time reversal, and time reversal with parity together. When I go to SL2C, I have more structure. There are more automorphisms available. In particular, there's one associated with conjugation of, if you have a 2x2 matrix representation of SL2C, you have conjugation. And that conjugation transformation gives you a notion of, it gives you an interesting automorphism. And when you go to represent it, it has all the sorts of properties you would expect a charge conjugation operator to have, where I'm using charge conjugation in particular to mean something like matter and antimatter symmetry. That occurs in particular in fermionic representations, famously. It doesn't in a bosonic representation. What you're looking at are these special representations of SL2C, which are doubly degenerate. So they look like representations of the Poincaré group, and that's the bosonic case. And in that case, that's the case that we always thought we were in. There's various arguments that suggest we wouldn't have noticed that when we were zoomed out to macroscopic scales. But in the fermionic representation case, you have this interesting exchange between two copies of the Poincaré group. And so it's sort of like you've got one description of possible states of the world and symmetries of the Poincaré group, and another one, which are related by an automorphism. They're perfect copies of one another. So it's a very good model for characterizing matter and antimatter exchange. It doesn't mention charge, but I think actually this is an interesting framework for studying proofs of the CPT theorem. Early proofs of the CPT theorem by Lüders and Pauli and Jost didn't actually look at gauge groups at all. What they were really just looking at were spinner structures and this sort of SL2C picture. So there is this further subtlety required to understand the relationship between matter antimatter exchange and charge reversal. That is the introduction of gauge symmetry. And so that's not picked up in this picture. But to me, it helps me understand why it is that antimatter and matter are linked up to time and space at all. It would be the case if you thought that the local space-time symmetry group isn't just the Poincaré group, but SL2C, its universal covering group, does just as good a job of representing those symmetries.
That's great, thanks, thank you.
Okay, I think we have time for one more brief question. I see Lee Smolin also raised his hand.
Hi, very beautiful talk. Thank you very much. Brian, are you willing to think about notions of time which we would call active? That is, notions of time where degrees of freedom are added, such as in causal set theories, where the time operator acts to increase the number of degrees of freedom, and where there is no time reversal, because roughly speaking, once something happens, you can't unhappen. You can do the reverse, but something that's inverse is different than unhappening.
Yeah, I mean, I think this sort of picture helps me understand when you say those sorts of things. Often people will write down a formal operator and say, this theory is not invariant under this formal operator time reversal. In my view, that's not a really precise way to think. What really usually happens is that we don't have, time reversal gets its meaning from a representation. How I know what time translation and time reversal mean is through this representation. If I don't have a representation, I don't have time reversal symmetry, I don't have an operator which can meaningfully be called time reversal. So I think in this sort of picture, that's exactly what I would say as well. Time reversal doesn't exist when we have this strong time asymmetry that you're proposing. Now, and yeah, I think it's compatible with these changing state space pictures, depending on how you define the right side.
Okay, so you could live happily in a world like that.
I live happily, yeah, in many, many nearby possible worlds. Thanks, Lee.
Thank you.